from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, they are out there, and you know who they are. Mel Gibson, Simon Cowell, Donald Trump, and Rush Limbaugh, and too many others you run into or run into you in the world of the everyday. UC Berkeley linguist and author Jeffrey Nunberg says, these days there's one word that has come to take center stage in the world of name-calling and everyday reproach, particularly for public personalities. In his new book, Ascent of the A-Word, Nunberg traces the history of the word, the A word, that is, and the personality type, and he'll join us in studio after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this hour of our forum program. Leo the Lip DeRocher. Many of the old folks out there remember a manager for the Dodgers and a baseball figure of great fame gave us the line that nice guys finish last. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. It might mean, therefore, if you invert it, that people who deserve the A word finish first. We all know what that ubiquitous word means and how it applies to the obtuse, uncivil, arrogant, pretentious, entitled, and self-important. It has become, in fact, according to San Francisco-based author and UC Berkeley linguist Jeff Nunberg, the word of our era, as phony was the widely used epithet of the era which preceded this one. And A-wordism, the general obtuseness and lack of concern for others, abounds, according to Professor Nunberg, whose most recent book is titled Ascent of the A-Word, A-ism, the first 60 years. A regular contributor for many years to NPR's Fresh Air, his work has appeared in the New York Times. He is the author of Talking Right and Going Nuclear, which we discussed on Forum. He's also emeritus chair of the usage panel of the American Heritage Dictionary and a winner of the Linguistic Society of America's Language and Public Interest Award, and joins us in studio for this hour. I think I got most of your bona fides there.
Enough, yeah. Certainly.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's delightful to have you back here. And this was real fun to read, and we're all shackled here because we talk about the A word, and people talk these days about the N word and the F word. I think people know what we mean here. It's when somebody cuts you off and you yell out that word almost automatically.
Yeah. And you know, my sense is that this is a crude word. It's a vulgar word.
Yeah.
It's a vulgar word, and if it weren't a crude word, a vulgar word, it wouldn't do the work it does for us. You need a vulgar word, a crude word. When some guy starts his leaf blower at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, you don't want to say you lout, right? You need something that expresses the full extent of your indignation, and that that crude word does that.
It does, and it's vulgar in the sense that it comes from the Vulgate, but it's also often used for, as you point out, particularly highly public people. I mean, at one point you say, and I suppose this is maybe a judgment call in some ways, Barbara Walters' 10 most fascinating people, and at least five of them, by your standards, deserve the title or the word.
Right. No, I actually made went down through the list of all the people she named. I mean, this year it was Steve Jobs, Donald Trump, Simon Cowell, Herman Cain, the Kardashians. Those are not judgment calls. Derek Jeter might be a judgment call, but some would say yes, some would say no. And then four who weren't. And year after year, that tends to be the proportion. Now, that's not even representative of the proportion of people who merit that label in public life. It's these are the people we're really interested in. And you get a character like Charlie Sheen or Mel Gibson, and they embody this Donald Trump. They embody this this property, and the people are fascinated with them.
But if they're too public, that is, if they're almost global in the way that, say, Hitler was or the way that Bin Laden is, they don't get that.
No, I don't know if it's a question of being too public or too remote and alien. This is a word we use for people of our own kind, members of our own tribe, the pretentious jerks down the block, maybe a president we don't like, but somebody we feel is of the same type. It's not a word we use, as I say, for Osama bin Laden. He's too exotic.
And mostly males.
Almost always males. And in fact, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. One is that it tends to be a word that's used of people who abuse positions of power. There are more men in those positions. Men tend to be the ones who confuse their status with their sense of self. You know, do you know who I am? That's the thing men say. But I think we also do women a disservice. I mean, you get a guy yelling at the gate agent about why didn't you give me an upgrade? You know how much money my company spends and so on and so forth. You and I look at each other. We don't even have to say the A word. That's what's in our minds. A woman does the same thing. And we think the B word, as if suddenly it had to do with some primordial feminine malignity instead of just the same swollen sense of entitlement. I think the gender equity demands that we use the A word more of women than we do.
I've heard it a lot of people like Ann Coulter, and of course it does apply to certain women. There's also, when you mentioned the gold card and Do You Know Who I Am, it brings to mind these stories that have almost become a part of urban legend. You know, the one about the guy who's having a tussle with a clerk at an airline station and says, "Don't you know who I am?" And then the woman goes on, and it's a woman who's doing this to the man, saying, "There's a man here who doesn't know who he is. Can somebody please?" And you tell the story, and this is actually a real story, I believe, about the gold card guy on 9/11.
Yeah, there's a guy I know is in he's a Texan. He's in New York on 9/11. He's freaked out. He's got to get back to his family in Texas. He goes to the ATM machines, gets a bunch of cash, goes over to the Hertz rental place on West 43rd Street. There's a mob of people. The planes aren't flying. Yeah, I think even the trains weren't running. It's a mob of people desperate to get home. And this little guy pushes through to the front of the line and says, "Excuse me, where's the gold card line?" And I thought, boy, this just embodies that the obtuseness, the sense of entitlement, the arrogance, all of the properties that this word embodies are personified in this one incident.
And it's fascinating, too, that you point out in your book that as this word gained, and we'll talk a bit about its, we've got 60 years of it, goes back to Norman Mailer. Also, I remember the F word he used, fug, over and over again in The Naked and the Dead. But also, I was struck by the fact that you said that empathy and narcissism also became widely used around the same time. Yeah.
The word originates, as you say, during the Second World War among GIs as a word for pretentious or officious officers and so on and so forth. It first appears.
It was a lieutenant who was a deke, I remember.
Yeah, he was just a one. It's a Proustian description. He goes, "Lieutenant Dove, J.G., USNR, U.S. Naval Reserve, a Cornell man, a deke, and a perfect A-word." It's a great description. That's the first character to bear that label. But it isn't really till the 70s. That it enters everyday use, that you begin to see it in Neil Simon plays and Woody Allen movies and Dirty Harry films and so on. It becomes just a word of our everyday moral lexicon. So that's the moment at which it would enters the language. Now I've forgotten what the question was.
Well, no, it just went back to the not only the origins, as you so aptly describe, but the sense that the word has come up around the same time in wide vogue use as words like narcissism and empathy.
It's interesting. Now with the big databases we have, we can actually track the appearance of these words in the language and their spread. And when the A word becomes part of general usage about 1970, it grows in frequency at exactly the same pace as these other words: narcissism, empathy, yuppie, authenticity, all of the moral language of our modern moral life begins at that moment and spreads at that pace. And they're all connected, I think.
So the yuppie's kind of been subsumed by the A word, hasn't it?
Well, a yuppie is somebody who merits that label almost by definition.
But, you talk about the A word, and then again, we're limited here in using these words because they're verboten and they remain so in terms of FCC regulations and all that. But there are also all these words that are used to describe people in terms of genitalia. And again, there's some big gender differences. And I'm thinking about the D word, nickname for Richard, which is used as widely as the A word, isn't it?
Right.
Almost?
I think it's become much more frequent, particularly in the last two decades or so. And, people sometimes think these are interchangeable. One of the interesting things about these words is that the first reaction people have, these words almost don't have a meaning. They're just the explosions of emotional steam blowing off. Even the dictionaries, when you look at the way they define these words, the Oxford English Dictionary defines the A word, I think, as someone, a contemptible person or something. And they use pretty much the same definition for the S word and the D word and so on. But these really do have subtle differences, subtle news. So you can merit the A word label, for example, for cheating on your wife, but not probably for cheating on your income tax. You can merit the A-word label if you cut somebody off in the left turn lane, but maybe not if you're texting while you drive. If you think George Bush merited the A-word, and some people do, it wasn't because of what he said about WMDs, but because of the way he smirked at the press. So these things have very specific meanings.
Nuanced, aren't they? And they're also really quite reflective of culture.
Right. No, and I think this word comes in In the early 1970s or late 60s, it comes in along with the changes in our idea of class and the movement to a more consumer-based notion of class. It's intimately tied to the rise of feminism. It's the feminists who decide that these men are no longer heels, these insensitive jerks. They merit the A-word label, and then other women pick it up. It's adopted by Est at the time. That was their term of abuse par excellence. So all of those movements, social movements that are going on in the early 70s, are intimately connected to this
word. Yeah, I told you before we went on there, we used to have a college award that we gave every year called the Ahoy Award. You know, you would select someone and figure out what that means of the year. There's there are other words that you talk about, just for a moment to focus on, if we can, like stanzata in Italian and pendejada in Spanish, that in some ways express similar but not quite the same.
They all come in around the same time. Most of these words come around the same time. And they all involve the names of, I guess I can say the words, the vulgar words in other languages. I guess NPR won't get on our, the FCC won't
I don't
get
think
on
it's the FCC things are listed in English only.
Right. So so stronzo in Italian, which is a word for turd. Pendejo in Latin American Spanish, which is a word for pubic hair, and so on, and the Germans use a word that means the same thing that the A word does. So they all involve some part of the body that's inconsequential and that people regard as kind of dirty or polluted or stigmatized. And they all come in around the same time. And what's odd, they don't mean the same thing. We have very different ideas about how we ought to behave to each other and so on. But nonetheless, if you know how to use the A word in English, you're going to get the Italian stronzo right 90% of the time.
Our guest, Jeffrey Nunberg, his new book is Ascent of the A Word, A-lism, the first 60 years. Actually, you make the distinction between the A word and A-ism.
I think it's important. I think because people say, well, are there more A-words walking around? I don't think so. But people always have that impression, but every age has always thought that it was less.
I think John McWhorter did a review of your book in the New Republic where he said it's a mistake to think that there are more.
Yeah, but and it wasn't what I said. I think he sort of got wrong what I said in the book, because I made a point of saying, look, if you nobody could read Trollope and Dickens and look at all the cads and bounders running around there and think that people have become more, there are more A-words walking around now than there were.
Cads, bounders, and heels, right?
And heels, yeah. Yes. They, you know, we replace the words, but not the people. But I think there is a style of interaction that you could think of as A-wordism, and that's characteristic of our age. This, for example, people complain about the incivility of political discourse, and then other people say, but no, they were saying worse things about Lincoln and Jefferson and Jackson and so on. No, they're absolutely right. Nonetheless, I think a character like Ann Coulter is unique. I don't think you could have had a character like that 50 years ago, not because she's more abusive than say, Westbrook Pegler was, the columnist of Roosevelt's years, but because she does it in this different way. She says about the 9/11 widows that they are enjoying their husband's death. Now, she doesn't care about these women. It's just a way of saying something outrageous so that the left will get indignant, so that the right can chuckle and enjoy the indignation.
And so that she can sell books.
Yeah, and so she can get invited, in that case, onto Good Morning America to repeat the remark for the benefit of the listeners and to sell more soap.
Thinking also in reading your book of how certain words take hold, and this is a good example of one that has definitely taken hold and become one used by people of all classes, and it has a much more class tainting to it, as I think you make the case. But I was thinking about words that I keep hearing a lot lately, like absolutely. People use that word so frequently, much more than they used to, or folks. The word folks has become so much a part of discourse, political and in general. And I thought, actually, I'd put the question out to listeners. I mean, we could talk about a people and A-ism. And one of the questions that intrigues me that I asked earlier on is, does it make a difference? Do people seem to be more in the roles of bosses and managers and power when they do have that label that's appropriate for them? Are there more of them out there, do you think? Or particularly, do they succeed more, I think, is really the question that I began with. But also, what words or phrases have you noticed that have gained cultural prominence or prevalence in recent years, and which ones do you like or dislike? As we're talking to one of our nation's leading linguists, Jeff Nunberg, who is, of course, at UC Berkeley and adjunct professor in the School of Information and commentator on language for Fresh Air, and also author of Ascent of the A-Word, A-ism, the First 60 Years. Let me invite you to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you now. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your involvement in the program and welcome your calls. Again, 866-733-6786. And you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our Facebook page, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, a lot of the kind of outrageous behavior that makes people use this label, this A-word, is also something that a lot of people like. I mean, that makes for popularity. That's the twin engine. I mean, for example, Simon Cowell. A lot of people love Simon Cowell and love that A quality of him.
They love The Apprentice, which is a show that's designed simply to show Donald Trump being an A-word to these other people who are also encouraged to be A-words to one another in their effort to get invited back on the program. Reality TV is built around that principle. Political cable talk shows, it's a 24/7 business model based around the spectacle of people being A-words to one another. So there's enormous interest in this category. At the same time, people are deploring the incivility of public life and so on. They say, why can't cable TV be more civil? The answer is because nobody would watch.
Well, it gets back to the thesis of one of your colleagues, Deborah Tannen, who said we're essentially a confrontational culture. That's what we become.
And we enjoy this kind of confrontation. And we enjoy in our private lives having an abusive term that we can use when somebody really merits it. When on the highway somebody does something really stupid and jerky and so on, you want to have a term to abuse them back. And I think that principle of the interesting thing about the A word is that it to use that word of somebody is to be uncivil to them, is to swear at them.
Maybe to be an A person yourself.
To be an A person yourself. I talk about the anti-A word, a character like Dirty Harry. The whole setup in those films is to provide he's surrounded by all these, the top brass and the media and the punks. It's all merit this A-word label, and he applies it to them so that you can enjoy the spectacle of seeing him do really nasty things to people who really deserve it, so he can be an A-word back at them. And that's the principle that I call the moral logic of A-wordism, if you will.
It's a kind of moral custodian
attitude.
But you do it to yourself, too. I left my notes at home this morning. Not that I'm necessarily – I mean, sometimes I bring them in and don't even use them or don't feel the need to use them or whatever, but I like to have notes in front of me. And I thought, what an A person you are to have left your notes there. I mean, sometimes it's just your own sloppiness or neglect or stupidity.
Right. Absolutely. And I think you can't write a book about this topic without seeing an opportunity for a certain amount of self-examination and self-analysis. And one of the reasons I like this A-wordism rather than just using the A-word as a noun is that – this is not simply a class of people like left-handers who are off in one corner of the world and so on. It's a malady we're all subject to, and few of us can go through ordinary life dealing with the cable company or the airlines or friends or in relationships without on occasion exhibiting this property. And I think it's important to realize that it's a condition. It's not just a class of people.
It's also something that's usually uttered often either sotto voce or away from the person. I mean, obviously in your car, but also, somebody we don't find, unless we're really compelled to yell it at somebody for the most part. I mean, that's crossing a certain border.
No, and for the most part, I think we use it in the third person. I mean, you're right. Some people, if you look at the surveys, the number of people who say they don't swear is anywhere from 5 to 15%. And, you know, probably some of them are telling the truth. But I don't think there are very many people who don't think this word when they see that guy pushing to the front and saying, where's the gold card line?
Let's bring our callers in, and we'll go first to you, Elizabeth. Join us.
Hi. I'm calling from Berkeley, and I just had a question about the usage of the A word because, there's a Stephen King quote in particular, and I don't remember what story it's in, but he says the definition of the A word of an A word is somebody who doesn't believe what's in front of their eyes. And I'm sort of curious now he's in Maine, and sometimes he uses slang that I'm a little unfamiliar with. And I'm curious, I wanted to ask your guest if he thinks that that's just a difference in meaning, or if perhaps that definition of sort of being willfully ignorant actually leads to the condition that we're talking about of being the A-word, of being arrogant and uncompassionate?
Yeah, it's a good question, because you don't know how much is just obtuseness and how much is meanness, right?
Right, and I think it's a terrific question, and King is right on about that. What makes you qualify for this word isn't your malignancy, isn't necessarily the amount of damage you do, but that obtuseness, that moral obtuseness, a culpable refusal to see what the situation really merits and to imagine that your role or your position entitles you to behave toward people in ways that you don't. And for that reason, we really measure the degree to which somebody merits the label by the discrepancy between what's out there and what he thinks is out there. So I think that's a terrific – obtuseness rather than just a sense of entitlement is the crucial point here.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for that. And let me bring another caller on here, and that's you. Shara, hi.
Hi. So I was thinking about the use of the words literally and seriously, and as they're being used in ways that are not literal or serious, as in, I literally almost died.
Yeah, yes. Literally is overused. Yeah. I quite agree, don't you, Jeff?
You know, I do, but you know, you people always say, "Have you noticed how lately people are misusing?" Well, Thackeray used it that way. I literally burned with wit. He says, and people have been complaining about this word. What was I make about 170 years? They've been complaining about the abuse of this word. And you know, it's an interesting word. If you think that you can't use it that way, you're saying that literally is the sole word in the English lexicon that you're not permitted to use in a figurative way.
Thank you for that call. Have we finally, do you think, maybe reached, and this is a cliche that's overused too, the tipping point with, well, not only tipping point, but with awesome?
I hope so. These words tend to, superlatives like that tend to burn out. You know, I try single-handedly to keep alive the hipsters solid, but those words tend to burn out over a course of a generation. And there will be some other equally annoying word that whose purpose is not only to express a superlative idea, but to annoy you and me and people of our generation.
Yeah, you're talking about gender differences a moment ago when we were talking about the A word being mostly applied to men and often applied by women to men. There are a lot, you know, you hear womanizer, but you don't hear manizer. I mean, and there are women who certainly prey upon men, probably, I would imagine. I mean, and there's the word, all that fuss about the word slut with Rush Limbaugh and so
right,
forth.
Right.
It's a word, it's a vicious word, or can be used in that. And yet a lot of people went on a demonstration in Toronto taking it and embracing it, you know, women, obviously. Like blacks have done with the N-word, like gays have done with the word right. Queer and so forth.
Linguists sometimes call those reclaimed epithets. And sometimes it works. Queer, dyke, certainly we have the dykes on bikes in San Francisco, and it's used as a term of it is a defiant use of the word. And slut, I'm less sure about the ability of women to reclaim it, but I understand the motive behind the movement. And, you know, A word is a word that I think quite mistakenly. There's a movement now of men who say, I'm proud to be an A word and so on. Either they're young managers who take Bobby Knight or Steve Jobs as their life model, or these guys
who lawyers take pride in
lawyers. Yeah. Yeah, no. In fact, there are, I have incidents in the book in which lawyers say at Skadden Arps, a famous law firm, we pride ourselves on being A-words. My sense is that if you're defiantly proud of being an A-word, you're not an A-word at all. You're a D-word.
Well, join us. You can do it on Facebook. You can do it by emailing forum at kqed.org or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment and grab a line when it's available. 866-733-6786. Spending the hour with linguist Jeff Dunberg, his book, Ascent of the A-Word. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. And as English speakers, we have a plethora of epithets at our disposal available to hurl at those whom we reproach. But linguist Jeffrey Nunberg says, these days, there's one word that has come to take center stage in the world of name-calling. In his new book, Ascent of the A-Word, he traces the history of the word and the personality type. Jeffrey Nunberg is an adjunct professor at UC Berkeley School of Information and commentator on language for NPR's Fresh Air, former chair of the usage panel of the American Heritage Dictionary, And again, his new book is The Scent of the A-Word. And I'm just looking at some emails here. I didn't ask, by the way, for listeners to suggest candidates, but here's a listener, Bruce, who wants to go on record saying, my vote goes for Larry Ellison. I mean, some of these rich public people who get those kind of votes, if indeed they are votes. Let me just read a couple more emails, because Stav writes, I try to keep these words out of my vocabulary, believing that the terms we employ affect our thought patterns. But isn't it interesting how they become gender exclusive? The B word is particularly corrosive in our culture, I feel. And then Anne says, of course it would make no sense to call a woman the A word. The background meaning of the term is the use of homophobic allusion, the low of the low in a sexist view of it all.
Yeah, with regard to this last point, I know some gay men who have argued that there's a homophobic character to the word. I don't think so. I don't think when you use the word of Donald Trump or some other public figure that's there. There is this expression a word buddy, which I think does have that does have that character, but I don't hear it in the word.
Go to more of your calls, and we welcome Jacques. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I am interested in the difference between the D word and the A word, and wondering if the word root of the A word being synonymous with donkeys, the various wolfish and stubborn qualities we attribute to them, have a lot to do with the difference between the two words.
Boy, that question raised a lot of interesting.
I'm thinking of Jeff immediately. Yeah. Is bottom in Shakespeare?
Right, right. the word ass for donkey is a word you see all the time in say Henry James and so on and so forth. Modern students may be shocked to see it there because it flipped, maybe due to the influence of the A word. It flipped to refer to the bottom.
It was
rather
originally
than,
always
than,
a donkey or a mule. Even. Yeah.
So that's absolutely true. I think you there's a good point there that the D word or the P word as used of people and those almost exclusively of men. Implies a malignity, a nastiness that may be present with the A word, but with the A word, there's a sense of obtuseness. You can be an A word without really having what the lawyers call a mens rea, an intent to do harm. You can just be the boss in the office, for example, who's a classic instance of this because of the extent of his obtuseness, really is not a malignant type. He's just clueless for the most part.
Speaking of malignancy, wouldn't you say that the D word and the P word, this is so off, talking about going alphabets here, is not as malignant as the C word used for women?
No, the C word used for women is the one word in the American discourse that really is on beyond redemption as a word. And British use it all the time just to mean something like the A word, but in America, it's a word that's beyond the pale. And there's always one word in every culture that's beyond the pale, though it's different from one culture to the next.
Talk about the British. I mean, we're talking about words that are used as epithets and that are pejorative, but I keep hearing the word brilliant from the British. I mean, they use it about something they like. They use it about something they approve of or countenance. It's just
right.
Constant.
Brilliant, diabolical. They have a number of words like that they use that we don't.
We go to more calls, and we welcome Kim. Hi, Kim.
Enjoying the show very much. Thank you. It made me think of Battlestar Galactica and the use of the word, a modification of the F word, which now means something akin to oil drilling. And since I happen to find the F word rather phonetically fun, I occasionally slip and so retrained myself.
We can say that word, Kim. Fracking.
Speak oil, yes. And then I'm also a Game of Thrones fan, and just hear the forbidden C word attached to a man made it somewhat more amusing to me somehow. And I just wanted your comment on that. And I think this is I find this topic very very amusing, interesting, and kind of relevant because we all need some way to say how fracking annoyed we are. Thank you.
Thank you.
The on fracking, it's interesting because the oil industry suddenly decided when the word acquired that Battlestar Galactica sense, they became very indignant about it, though they had actually introduced the term in that context. What the Battlestar Galactica that fracking says to me is that it's very hard to introduce a profane or vulgar or taboo word past to invent one. These are words that you basically learn not to say when you're 5 or 6 or 7 years old, when your mouth is washed out with soap, either literally or figuratively. And beyond that point, you really can't acquire the sense of stigma that's associated. Well, I mean, kids learn this when they're about 5, and they take a pleasure in saying shampoo. Because the very syllable "poo" is charged with forbidden meanings, and if you don't learn that when you're 5, you're not going to learn it when you watch a science fiction TV show when you're 16.
Here's Lynn from Oakland who says, "Not to discount your analysis of when, how the word, the A word, got to be popular, but it was also coincident with the return of vets from the Vietnam War. They were drafted, thus unwilling and resentful, and they were in a military situation, thus acquiring military language." And I put out the question about word use that people are particularly aware of now. And this listener, Mary, writes, "Howdy, folks may be rising in usage because 'you guys' is no longer politically correct. I absolutely hate the predominant use of 'what a great question' when someone asks any question, great or average." We both used it, but we used it very specifically. Yeah. Another listener, Robert, says, "You mentioned absolutely. How about indeed, a meaningless word that has nothing but is used to imply gravitas?" Ashley says, "I love the use of the word, phrase, question, seriously, with a question mark. It may have been popularized by the TV show Grey's Anatomy. It means unbelievable. How dumb. Does that even make sense? Did you really just do that? You left your notes at home? Seriously? One word with the right inflection means so much." And Andy says, "The new usage that I find most annoying is the word campus to describe what would have been called an industrial park just a few years ago. It reeks of conceit and attempts to mask the true motivation of organization profit."
Boy, that's quite a
bunch. Grab bag.
Seriously, let me mention seriously. I like that. It's one of those expressions of the new snark. Like really, Gail Collins is a master of this. She also is a master of using that. People, listen, people. And one word, another word that has that same flavor is when people use it as if to correct somebody's stupid mistake that somebody's made. Say,
or
Ringo.
Duh.
With
what about duh?
Duh. Yeah. Ringo was the band's drummer. That sort of thing. And it's new. I mean, has been in the language forever, right? And we've suddenly come up with a new use for it in the last decade.
That's close to a holy syllable, actually.
Right.
Isn't it?
Right, yeah.
"Consider so," a listener writes. "It seems that almost every sentence in public dialogue begins with 'so.' You do hear it a lot."
I think it began with engineers or business schools or whatever. And it introduces an explanation. So I ask you, when did this word enter the language? And you say, "So it was during the Second World War," indicating that what you're about to give is an explanation of the...
It's a transitional word.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuart says, "This is a little off topic, but please ask Mr. Nunberg about the origin of the phrase 'used to.' It's an unusual construction. It seems to have several different usages and meanings. 'I used to love her, but it's all over now. I could get used to that.' Where does this phrase come from?"
Well, it comes from used to. It was my habit to do this, and they merged together in what a linguist might call a para auxiliary. Now you have a name for them.
We got the jargon.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me go to another caller. Chris, hi.
Hi there. Great conversation, you guys. I would like to suggest, in the interest of greater precision in your anger towards someone else, this is reminding me of a conversation between a colleague referring to another colleague. He wasn't quite the A word, and, you know, there's something about that word that's very satisfying to say, and I think that's part of why we like to use it, but it wasn't quite suiting this particular individual. My other colleague said, "You know, he's no A word. He's more of it was the D word, referring to a feminine hygiene appliance, and it was completely appropriate. So I'd like to offer that word as a suitable... it's somehow more passive than the A word, or a little less malignant, even though it's not necessarily malignant to be an A word. But the D word was highly suitable in that case, and I think could be suitable in other cases as well."
Yeah, I think a lot of women would disagree with you. A lot of women find that use of that word really unpleasant, and it suggests something polluted or foul about the process and or the area it's designed to clean. So I don't use the word, and I really don't like the word at all.
Well, we thank you for bringing it up, Chris, because it is one of those in use. And we'll go to more callers, and we'll go to Bill next. Bill, you're on.
Yeah. Hi. I'd like to ask the author what he thought about the how Kurt Vonnegut used the A word as a picture in one of his books. I can't remember the name of it, but I'm sure you do. When you turn the page, he had the picture there of intersecting lines. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do have a vague memory of it, and I should have looked it up again in the course of writing this book, but I didn't. So it's too vague a memory for me to comment on it.
But it makes the point about this being somehow not a visual word. I mean, it's a word that's used that doesn't necessarily conjure, although we all know what it should conjure.
Right. And, you know, I think what's interesting about this vocabulary, and we might have said earlier, that this is something that happens uniquely in English in the course of the mid-20th century, that a bunch of words that have obscene meanings that refer to parts of the body or sex acts or elimination or so on are pressed into service to be descriptions of things that have no intrinsic obscenity at all. So when you use the A word of, I keep saying Donald Trump, I used to say George Steinbrenner was my classic, and since he's dead now, I can't do that. But you're not saying anything about Trump's sex
habits. Why can't you call
habits?
A dead person by the A word?
I think just de mortuus. One doesn't call the dead person by any nasty words until they've been dead long enough to
you could
go
say
back to it.
George Steinbrenner was.
An A word. He certainly was. But there's nothing obscene about the concept. There's nothing about calling somebody an A-word that you couldn't say on the op-ed page of the New York Times if you used more decorous language. And similarly with the advent of a new word, the beginning with bull for nonsense, and similarly with the invention of all of these compounds where you take the F-word and add up or off or something like that to make a new word. These are all perfectly ordinary notions. There's nothing obscene about the notions, but we've taken obscene words and created these new words. And that's something the English language never did before. It's the first time it's ever happened that these words have acquired those kinds of senses. That's what fascinated me about the process at the beginning.
As long as you mentioned the F word, by the way, it's always been fascinating to me how little it has to do with its original meaning. I mean, coitus. It's come
right.
to mean so many other things that sort of lost that meaning almost.
In fact, if I may, the some people tie the rise of this vocabulary to a greater feeling of liberty in discussing these things, the D.H. Lawrence and Margaret Mead and so on and so forth, all of that, the repeal of reticence, as one historian described it. In fact, they're working at cross purposes. When Lawrence uses these words in Lady Chatterley, he's trying to purify them and dispel all of the stigma that attaches to them. When David Mamet has characters using the word, he's counting on the sense that they're dirty words. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the force they do. So Mamet and Lawrence are drawing from different linguistic wells.
I actually said something in an onstage interview with Mamet about his words shocking people and perhaps being designed to shock. He really kind of seemed to be very thin-skinned and took umbrage at that. Didn't like that notion at all, obviously. Here's Jeremy who writes on our Facebook page, "My friend and I decided a while ago that a lot of society's fundamental problems come down to this fact. All other things being equal, the A has the advantage. If you're not willing to be an A and someone else is, you're at a disadvantage. Unless we can find a way to change that, our ability to address much of the inequality in society is limited."
You know, there's been a lot of talk about this, particularly in the business world. Robert Sutton, a Stanford business professor, had a business bestseller with a book called The No A-Word Rule. And he argued, and I think he's right, that the idea that you have to be an A-word chronically to succeed in business is simply wrong. You got all these junior managers and so on buying Isaacson's biography of Jobs, not out of biographical interest, but to take as a life manual of how I should be. And the fact is that of
shoeless people, and smelly, is
right? Of the people who take that tack, maybe one will wind up in the corner suite. Another 500 will wind up having lunch by themselves in the employee cafeteria. So it isn't the case, I think, that one has to adopt that style in order to succeed in business or anywhere in life.
Libby writes on our web page, "When Jeffrey said that anyone who is proud of being an A word is actually a D word, after my 23-year-old told me that the D word, what the D word is, I just cracked up. That's so right and hilarious. I appreciate Jeffrey more every time I have the pleasure of listening to his ideas." And another listener, Paula, writes on our webpage, seems like we have a love-hate relationship with A-words. We hate how aggressive and in-your-face they can be, but we seem to like them in public office, heads of companies, etc. Last, my son can't figure out why teenage girls are attracted to them instead of nice guys.
Well, that's been a question that parents have been asking for a long time about their daughters and sons. But I don't know, again, that we – certainly there's a fascination with these characters. But sometimes there's also, in a certain sense, Donald Trump is an A-word, so we don't have to be. You can be fascinated with a type without really wanting to emulate that type. Now, it's true. I was struck during the Republican primaries how many of the candidates – merited that label. On the other hand, with the sole exception of Richard Nixon in 1968, I can't think of one case in which the American people have elected a president to office who they considered meriting the A-word. Some people thought that of Bush in 2004, but he was already the president, and Kerry also merited. So I think, by and large, people are not attracted to characters like this.
Yet another letter that is not a profane word, the right. Q factor. I mean, right, the likability of a presidential candidate is very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me go to more of your calls here, and we'll go next to San Francisco, and Neil joins us. Hi, Neil.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm calling up about a phrase that you hear so much now when people throw going forward into their sentence, which to me would suggest that there's a possibility that we could actually go back and change things. And anytime anyone says it, I just want to strangle them, basically.
It annoys me, too. It's a word that I think may have been popularized by CNBC, the business network. It's endemic in that particular sector, and I'm not sure what the point is.
Thank you for that, Neil. Good to hear from you. And we hear next from Scott in Oakland. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hi. I used to do a piece called An A-Word in His Prime. And in the piece, I used to riff on you have to be a certain age to be deemed an A-word. Nobody ever says that about an infant or a toddler. And I also thought that the equivalent for women was the word, the B-word, not the A-word, and that famous people, they probably had a public persona and a private persona. And Gandhi, while his public persona was sainted, somebody must have thought he was an A-word.
Well, thank you for those comments. It's good to hear from you, Scott. Actually, Jeff, you make the point in your book that kids are often referred to, and here we go again with another letter, by the S word, a little S.
Because kids can be evil at 3 and 4 years old. But to merit the A word, you have to be in a position, you have to be obtuse, as I say, which is to say you have to be in a position to know better and then to do something anyway. And a five-year-old doesn't know that. And so we don't use that word of five-year-olds by and large.
But you can say the five-year-old is making an A out of himself or herself,
right?
That's okay. Let me go back to another caller here. Mitch, hi. Join us.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I was reminded listening to the show of one of my old favorite shows on HBO, and that was Deadwood. And that was sort of known for its use of truly foul language. And I later found out that it was totally, inappropriate in terms of the time period the show was set in. And, you know, they use these words anachronistically to really give the characters character, I'd say. And the other thing I would mention about the show is, you know, I loved it, but a lot of people I tried to get into it were really turned off by the language and the rampant swearing. And I think it's a double-edged sword sometimes when you use that sort of language and, you know, it can turn people off really easily, but it can also, you know, be beneficial and create really memorable characters.
I think those are both good points. If Deadwood had rendered the language of the late 19th century, even in the South Dakota mining camp, accurately, people might have said damn or hell. They probably would have said things like tarnation and gall darn as well. It would have sounded like Yosemite Sam. Because the passage from those words, which are technically profanities, words involving religion, to these obscene words hadn't happened yet, by and large. You're right that a lot of people are disturbed by these words. I asked Eric Alterman for a blurb for this book. Now, Eric Alterman is the last person that you wouldn't think of him as a delicate flower.
You think of him as A-word, actually.
Yeah. some do. But he said, you know, I hate that word, but I'll write the blurb anyway. And a lot of people are just put off by the word, and I quite understand it.
Yeah, I absolutely understand it as well because, you know, the words are curse words. You know, it really does come back to the, you know, the ill will so intrinsically linked to them. But I also think, you know, at some point I can sort of turn off my capability to be extended and just sort of enjoy the show.
Thank you, Mitch. Good to hear from you this morning. And let's hear from some of our listeners via email. Dave writes, I hear increasing use of the C word on men, specifically whiny and entitled men.
It's a British usage. In Britain, it simply doesn't have the stigma it does in American English. It's like wanker is a British usage. That I can say it because the FCC probably doesn't even know it. But it has that same for somebody who masturbates, literally. But those words are used in Britain. They're not used here. And it's interesting how that vocabulary varies from within the English-speaking world.
Caleb writes, have you seen any use of the A word in lieu of the B word to describe women? For example, a calling of a female boss, the B word, feels wrong, but using A word feels right.
As I said, I think that's absolutely right. I think we should use the A word of women who demonstrate a swollen sense of entitlement, just as we do with men. To use the B word implies that it has something essentially to do with gender, that it's about being a woman rather than just being somebody who's abusing her position. So I think there's a kind of sexism, you'll excuse my putting, involved often in using the B word instead of the A word for a woman who merits the A word.
Yesterday we had Victor Davis Hanson on, and he used the word schizophrenic three times, and I had to finally say to him, because I'd heard from many listeners when that word was used to just mean divided or ambivalent or bipolar or whatever, that it was a word that was probably inadvisable. And here's Agnes in Berkeley who writes, I'm a bit jarred by the use of the word malignancy is being bandied about on this show. Since for us who have cancer, malignancy has acquired a special meaning. Wouldn't the word malice be more appropriate?
Well, I guess a malignant in the sense of having evil intentions goes back a long, long time in English and precedes its use in malignancy. And I think the idea that there's anything, if I may, that there's anything stigmatized about having what medicine calls a malignancy is just a mistake. There's nothing shameful about it. And you can talk about a malignancy in that sense without I'm fine with that.
Listen, Marcy says, I just came in and heard you talking about one of my favorite topics and must weigh in on the phrase, if you will. I don't even know what it means and how it grates on me. Sorry, Michael, I've heard you use it. Mea culpa, I probably have, but what do you think about that, Jeff?
You know, it's one of those ticks and twitches. I was thinking that I don't have it, and I don't know why I don't have it, because it's exactly the sort of pretentious tick that I might acquire. We all have it, as it were, if you will, and so on. And these are little ticks. I don't think they're worth bothering about.
Carrie says, you please must mention George Carlin's wonderful routine. How big an A word a person is directly proportional to how far away they are. The politician on TV, what an A word. And the guy standing next to you is speaking in a whisper, what an A word.
It's a nice point. Carlin is one of the two poles of discussion about these words. When these words come up, there are two discourses, two narratives that make me uncomfortable. The one is, the coarsening of American culture, the rise of incivility, and so on and so forth. The other is the Carlin-Jerry Rubin line, which as much as I love Carlin and find him entertaining, this idea that this is all just a matter of our hang-ups, and if we could get over these hang-ups, these words wouldn't be dirty, and so on. That's also a naive point of view. We need dirty words in order that we can express what we do with them. To say, I'm so angry and indignant that my emotions have overcome my inhibitions, or that you're such a terrible person that you don't merit the politeness and respect that would normally inhibit me from using these words.
Sense.
That's what these words do.
No, I think
that
makes
really an important
that makes
function.
Sense. Although you hear people say, "I don't like those words, and they offend me, and they are anti-Christian, or they're anti-whatever religion I am, they shouldn't be used."
Well, they're supposed to be offensive, and if they weren't offensive, as I say, we wouldn't have words to use when we really are genuinely offended by somebody or something.
Theo tweets us, when did or has I mean supplanted you know as the preferred generic lead in or close of a statement?
Gee, you know, and there I go. you know is still very much with us. It was there in Henry James. It's been around for a long time. I mean may be more recent. It may be early 20th century. It's hard to know. But I think they have different meanings. And I think they're both the little particles that we use to, so to speak, direct the conversational flow, and you can overuse them, but we need them.
Bob writes, whatever happened to your welcome? I thank a cashier for bagging my groceries, and the response is either no problem or thanks. Even on NPR, at the end of an interview, the host says thank you, and always I hear the interviewee say thanks, not you're welcome.
Well, your welcome implies that the thanks are justified, and in a way it acknowledges you're absolutely right to thank me for what I did. And if you want to say, no, it was nothing, really, you shouldn't thank me at all, that's in a sense, in certain circumstances, a more polite response than you're welcome. So you make these choices. It's a delicate business, but that's what civility's about, these delicate choices.
Sometimes I hear my mother's voice, maybe two times maybe, in my head, but she used to say, thank you kindly. And I will hear myself saying that from time to time. It's a very civil thing to say on certain occasions.
It's sweet.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. Let me use it more. Here's a listener, Brad, who says, could you ask your guests about the origin of hella, very commonly used in California?
I think it is a California invention. It's spread all over the place. I'm not sure if it isn't in retreat now, the way these intensifiers tend to be. They have a half-life of maybe 15 or 20 years, and then they vanish. So it's hardly worth noticing because it'll be off on the next tide.
And another listener, Rain, says, at work, use the expression goober to describe people who are harmless, sort of inept. Have you ever heard this expression used in this way?
Oh, my wife uses it all the time. And I use it as an example in the book, in fact. I say, well, if instead of the A word, we could have used goober for the same thing, but the obscenity does something else for us.
It gives it flavor. Yeah. It gives it force. Ascent of the A Word is the book. A-lism, the first 60 years. Jeffrey Nunberg is the author, and so good to have you with us. Thank you kindly for being here with us.
Well, thank you, Michael, and you're welcome.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated in the evening from 10 to 11, and invite you always to let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or you can continue this conversation, actually, by going to our website or our Facebook page. Website is kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. And let me thank the people who are behind the scenes here who can't get thanked enough. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our producers are Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Thank you for being a part of this program. If all goes according to plan, we'll be back with you on the morrow. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.